All right, I don't know what time it is on your clock, but I know what I'm getting ready for. It is time for the Professional CISO Podcast with David Malico.
Welcome, one and all, to the Professional CISO Podcast. I'm your host, David Malico. This show is on explorations of the topics necessary to professionalize the role of the CISO. So this morning, we have an interview with a public cloud security leader that has over a decade of experience in building and maturing cloud security programs. His roots are in governance, risk, and compliance, or GRC, and he's leveraged that into a full program practice. So now, also a little bit notables about our guest. So he is a Marine Corps veteran, and we performed the same job when we were in the Marine Corps Security Forces. Not exactly the same job. He was in a different place doing a different thing. I was as well, but we had some of the core basic training around that, which was pretty cool. They called it Gunslinger School. We could talk about that in a minute. Other notable item for our guest today is he grew up in Alaska, and he spent a majority of his high school years on the island of Guam. I think there's some introspection there, I'm sure. But before we begin, I do want to talk about a huge reminder to everyone. Digital Fight Club is back. Yes, season one, episode one, and it is being recorded for national television, right? So the topic, cybersecurity, which is why we're all excited. So we have sponsors, national levels, and there's one remaining, I think. So if you're on the edge, go ahead and flip it over, right? And talk to Mike Pratt. And we'll have seats available for free for CISOs, CIOs, and their teams, free of charge, so don't worry about that. But there is limited space, so you better sign up early. And then there's VIP and general admission available for purchase through the website, which is www.digitalfightclub.co. And the date is June 27th, 2024, and it is at the birthplace of the Digital Fight Club, which is the Granada Theater in Dallas. So we'll do some links in the notes. And you don't want to miss this because now we're going national, baby. Let's do it. Also, I want to do some shout outs. So we've had some folks that believed in us pretty early, actually before we even decided to record 1 minute of video or audio. And that is Interpris Security, founders over there, Nick Lanta, the CEO, Michael Jinks, the CTO, and Ian Roth, head of product. They're over there stitching everything together with the intelligence layer for continuous threat exposure management. Check them out. Also, ContraForce CEO Stan Golubchik and CTO Ricky Melendez. Those guys over there, they're pushing the boundaries when it comes to hyper-automation for security operations. Again, check them out. They're doing great things over there if you want to reduce your time from incident. All right, so now let's talk about being a professional CISO. In today's episode, our guest is Alan Rountree, currently Deputy CISO at IBM Public Cloud. He has held positions at Coalfire and at the United States Marine Corps. Please welcome Alan Rountree.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate the invite.
Awesome. So, love to have this to where it's a human story. And so what I like to do is get folks together and talk about their earliest times, right? So what's that story arc for Alan Rountree around starting as a young man, maybe as a young kid? How'd you get into the technology realm, and what is that story arc as it all the way through till today?
Sure. For me, my father, my stepfather, grandfather, uncles, you know, lots of military in my family. So focus on security and, you know, being able to combat evil, so to speak, is well ingrained with me. Fast forward into high school, I was in both Navy and Air Force ROTC. So I seemed to be on a path to go to the military. When I got out of high school, I didn't jump right in. So I joined the Marine Corps when I was 23, a little bit later than probably most Marines.
Absolutely.
But I leveraged that very well. So I was kind of like the grand old man. So, you know, I wasn't one of the young knuckleheads just trying to get out from underneath mama's wing. So that helped me be kind of a leadership voice, even amongst the Marines there. In the Marine Corps, decided that I was going to start getting my education. I was already doing site protection, site security, anti-terrorism, things that are direct correlations to what I do now in cybersecurity. Graduated from ITT Tech with an associate's and a bachelor's, and from there took the standard tech path, went into help desk and support, then into an analyst role, and then ended up landing in GRC where things really started to take hold. From there, landed the job with IBM about a year after they had acquired SoftLayer, and the director role just grew and grew and grew to where Deputy CISO is where I'm at now.
So you mentioned help desk in there.
Mm-hmm.
How critical do you think that was in your foundations of success?
I think starting from the bottom and working your way up is critical no matter what you pursue. I think that I live my life by three rules: be righteous, be humble when you can't be righteous, and be professional every day. Starting out crawling under other people's desks and plugging in or taking down cables or even just bolting together the desk itself builds a lot of expectation in what is really going on versus what your perception is. So starting out at that ground level is very important to me.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's dive right in with professionalization. So, you know, I don't think it's all that controversial, but, you know, do you believe that the idea of professionalizing the role of CISO is something that we should be doing? If so, what does that mean to you? If not, tell me why, right?
So there's lots of certifications out there, right, that either translate directly into a CISO role or at least into a practitioner at the handling the same things that a CISO would handle. So I don't know if we have to necessarily codify it yet, but I don't think that would be a bad idea either. I think one of the things that we need to come to is what are the expectations of the role that seem to be radically different from company to company, from seat to seat. For me at Public Cloud, the expectation for the role of CISO or Deputy CISO is going to be radically different than someone, you know, right outside the window here in a different position. So codifying something that is going to be so radically different might be difficult, but I think setting a minimum bar, like understanding some of the core concepts of business and of risk and of tech, is probably a very good idea.
Okay. So the CISO roles changed significantly before our eyes, especially in the last year and a half, 2 years. And now it involves this business risk mentality like you just indicated. So talk to me about the impact of this on the CISO and the practitioner roles. Like what are you seeing out there, especially in your space?
So I like to mentor people quite a bit. And so a lot of IBMers and even some folks outside of IBM come to me for questions of how they can get into cybersecurity or, you know, what can they do for the next step? How can they become managers? I think that it's really key to understand when you talk about a business risk, you understand what that risk is intrinsically. So some sort of technical risk, right? You understand how it can be impacted and leveraged, but you also have to understand how the business that you're in or that you're supporting is going to observe that risk and react to that risk. And do they want to do a risk transferral? Do they want to just do a risk acceptance because it's too expensive? Do they want to push that off to like insurance in the transferral role? Or are they going to remediate it? And how long will it take them to remediate that risk? So really understanding the business's observation of that risk is very important. That takes a little bit of time to really understand the tribal nature of any given business, but there are some things that you can expect from, let's say, a cloud business, right? We are on the web, full open. You know, there are certain things that we cannot do, like we can't shut down entirely. We can't impact our customers that way that maybe an online retailer could shut everything down for a short period of time to mitigate that risk. So there are certain things that you can understand when you compare what the business does and how it does it as played against that risk itself. So understanding the way that risk impacts a business is very important.
So from the practitioner side, can you talk a little bit about where they should be focusing their time and development around risk? Again, if they wanted to be, you know, the next Alan Roundtree deputy CISO of IBM Public Cloud, like what should they be working on for their development path?
So I would say a lot of CISOs probably come from a technical background, and that's really good. Understanding how the tech interacts with the business is key, vital. You have to have that for the seat, in my opinion. But trying to take that a couple of steps further, like how does this risk impact my customers? How does this risk impact the users in the company? How does this risk impact the marketing department, right? What kind of questions are our customers going to come and ask us if they identify that this risk impacts us? So trying to understand the full biosphere, the full life cycle of a risk within an organization is an area of focus that a lot of people kind of get lost on. I guess you can boil that down to the difference between a vulnerability and a risk. Mm-hmm. Does the vulnerability exist in a system? Yes, it does. We've scanned it. We found that it's technically there. The code is there. We're running that code. So the vulnerability exists. Is it a risk to us? Maybe not, because we have multiple layers of abstraction beyond that one system. That means that that risk cannot be realized, or the likelihood is heavily reduced.
Right. So when we talk about risk, I think you always hear kind of the people saying, hey, I'm having a hard time communicating, or people are having a hard time, especially security folks, right? CISOs, right. Practitioners having a hard time communicating risk. So how do we become fluent in that language of risk as security professionals?
I don't think there's one answer. For me, I like to take things and give them corollaries or similes. Mm-hmm. Like for me, building a risk is like riding a bicycle, right? You have your balance, you learn how to manipulate the machine that you're on, and now you have to take this machine and navigate a parking lot, or you know, a ramp or some dirt or something like that, right? And you have to be able to understand just operating the machine has its own set of risks, and then each environment has its own set of risks. And so I try to take it out of tech when I explain something to a non-technical person or an executive that's less technical, mm-hmm. right? Explain it to them in some sort of manner or lived experience that they can relate to. Like if I know that the person across from me likes to cook, I'll give them a breakdown of that risk in the form of cooking. Like, hey, if you don't add this to your recipe, then your souffle won't rise, right? So same thing, this is a critical point here in the technical risk. If we don't have this, then there's absolutely no way we can be successful. Versus, this is not so critical. If we don't have this one component, it'll still, the cake will still come out, it just won't be as moist. So trying to bring it out of tech and into a different type of activity, I've been very successful.
Here, making it approachable, mm-hmm. making it something that they can link the ideas to. Mm-hmm. There's a translation factor in there as well.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that, kind of the translation factor?
Yeah, so for that, I think you have to be good enough at tech and understand the tech to relate it to something else. Mm-hmm. So you want to still have that strong tech foundation. But you have to kind of bring yourself out of your seat, maybe put yourself in someone else's seat and ask yourself, if I had to explain this to someone who speaks a different language, how would I do that? Mm-hmm. You know, what pictures could I draw? Mm-hmm. How can I make this a non-technical discussion about a very technical problem? That's at least the thought process I go through.
Gotcha. Excellent. All right, so let's dive into tech a little bit here.
Okay.
Right, so you sit in the cloud space, and
I
have for quite a while.
Yeah.
But you've done both, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what makes cloud different? And I think there, you know, that sounds like a very simple question, and I think as the high level of adoption of cloud that we have now, it may seem oversimplistic, but
right.
There's a distinct difference. And we play to multiple audiences, so some folks are gonna be like, oh, I already know this as CISOs, right? But maybe we got some practitioners coming up and going, hey, I haven't been exposed to cloud all that much.
Right.
So talk to me kind of about what that difference is, what you're seeing relative to security.
So I think the biggest difference with cloud is it's really someone else's computer, right? That whole joke. But that joke is in reality. The systems that we run for cloud, we have a stratification of our reaction. Is this a pure infrastructure? In other words, do I really stop caring about the risk at the switchport because that's what I'm contracted to do? Or do I care enough about how the customer is running their piece of tech? Do I have any telemetry that shows that they are operating some sort of risk that they either do or do not understand? And how do I express that to them? What is the risk of just having that customer operating that tech provide to us? And so I not only have like a cyber response team, but I have an anti-abuse team, mm-hmm. which means when you, the customer, do something that is malicious on the internet and I get a report of it, I am required to act, not only by law, but just by the nature of trying to protect IBM's reputation. So as far as from a customer perspective, you have to realize that the cloud providers care about those things and they are going to act on those things. As much as you do or you would want them to. Let's say you're a financial institution and you're on a cloud service provider. You don't want your app running on the same IP space of, let's say, a human trafficker or a botnet provider.
Right.
So you care intimately about how the cloud service providers are going to respond to awareness of those things. And so those are problems that a cloud provider will have that maybe another company that is not leasing IP space would have.
And so from the CISO and practitioner perspective, right? So like I'm sitting in my seat in the car on my way to my job, you know, in my commute. Let's talk about risk and actual technical. What do I need to be thinking about as I progress my career, as I progress myself, right? And say, where's cloud going? Mm-hmm. What does this path look like? Again, risk and technical perspective. And what do I need to be thinking about when I'm trying to meet those requirements or those or where that path is going?
Sure. Cloud providers are seeing a lot of right to audit push, not only from marquee customers like banks, government, critical infrastructure, but also now from legislation. So DORA coming out of the European Union and other types of or pieces of legislation in Australia, India, Indonesia, even in the United States are starting to require cloud providers to expose their operations and the risks of those operations more and more to the end customer. One of the things that cloud providers have to deal with now is not only how do I get the data available and how do I have that right to audit, but how do I operationalize the ability to meet those needs? It's not as simple as saying, okay, I have, you know, I need four extra people. Those people have to really understand the risk posture, the business, and the risk that is posed to the business by opening that information up to customers and to maybe to non-customers, right? Do we put that information out on a podcast or on some sort of blog post that anyone can find out and then have to deal with fielding questions about that and how do you answer something in a way that you know can damage your business without the public feeling that you're being distruthful
right.
to them, right?
Right, exactly. Okay, shift a little bit.
Okay.
Because I think both of our favorite subjects, which is leadership.
Right? Yes.
And just let's start at the core. What are your core leadership principles?
So my core principles, I align mostly with servant leadership. In the Marine Corps, you have two types of Marine leaders, right? You have the mission comes first or the men come first. For me, and this won't be in every situation, but in most situations, one Marine can't accomplish every mission. So I need the men. So I'm going to focus on the men. The men will take care of the mission with me. So to me, that translates into servant leadership. And that's where I founded my core principles is to be righteous when you can be. Be humble when you cannot be, and then be professional every day. And then I tell everyone number two is the most important, right? A lot of high-strung young people will think that number one is the most important, to be righteous. Well, you can't be righteous all the time. That's why number two exists.
Right.
And number two is the most important, is to remember that everyone messes up and understand how to recover from that.
How do you, in those young, eager A personalities, how do you make that messaging impactful, especially with number two?
I give them all the leash they need to go out and fail. And before I let them fail, I let them fail. I tell them failure is always an option. I've taken that option many times in my career, and I'm your leader, so I must have done something right. and make sure that they know that they're going to have all of my support, whether they are successful or they have failures, and tell them to go forward. And I give them that leash, let them go out. They're going to succeed. They're going to fail. When they fail, we talk it through. We take it head on. We deal with the failure and understand why, and make sure that we are trying to set ourselves up so we don't make the same failure again and repeat our mistakes, because that's the biggest problem. Also, I don't let them see me ever be afraid of failure or be afraid to say that, you know, to admit that I was wrong. I do that openly. I do that publicly, and let them see that I believe that to my core. And then I take them into rooms with me where they wouldn't normally go. Like, can they get into a senior leadership meeting? Certainly they can. All I have to do is invite them. So I bring them into those things where I may be getting dressed down for messing up or for not acting fast enough or, you know, not considering enough of the business's requirements of me. So I bring them into those rooms and let them see me perform and let me see me fail amongst my superiors and my leadership chain, so that they understand that what I'm saying, I'm actually practicing as well. And I also give them the opportunity in those rooms to present. Mm-hmm. You know, some leaders will want to, I guess, congregate that power, that voice, or just around them so that they're the voice, right? Yeah, the consolidation. I'm not one of those. I like to distribute it. I like to make sure that, you know, the younger folks that are on my team are getting the opportunity to speak their information into those rooms where that's possible. And so I do that as often as I can.
Excellent. So what's your approach in developing leadership in others, right? So you have, and there's multiple facets of that, right? So you have your subordinates, you have peers as mm-hmm. well, and then you can even lead up, as we've all seen, right?
Yes.
So kind of talk me through each one of those. How do you, what is your method of going about that?
So for my subordinates, it's easy. Walk the talk, talk the walk. Prove it to them every day. Give them the opportunity to be me when I can't be in every room, right? Everyone gets multiply booked. For my peers, I find being an advocate is probably the most beneficial course. Mm-hmm. I don't want to wield their voice. I don't want to steal their thunder. I don't want to make decisions for them, but I am definitely ready to advocate for them, both when they're in the room and when they're not. You know, if someone is asking me to do something that is technically belongs in another area, I'm going to point to them quickly and say, here's my opinion on it, but they are the authority. We really need to get them in the room and bring them in. Not being, an empire builder with your peers is, I find, very important. At least I appreciate that with my own peers, and so it plays well with me with them. Managing up is a different beast entirely. Being a CISO, sometimes you're going to be more structured or more prepared for a conversation. And so being able to look at your manager who is not a GRC practitioner or a technical person, a deep technical person, it's difficult to walk that line and be proactive and do the right thing for your organization without feeling like you're trying to wear some superiority complex. And so I think some of the strategies that have worked for me is give the answer and say, hey, you know, we discussed this before on this other thing. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing here, right? Trying to draw a correlation to other story arcs that you've both been involved with, both in private and in a public meeting, right? So that they don't feel like you're treating them as though they're less than they are, because most of the people that I work for have a vast amount of skill in other areas that I am deficient in. So
a couple more questions on specific to you, specific okay. to really kind of us, but how has your military service impacted your cybersecurity career?
For me, greatly. Number one, the Marine Corps does nothing if it doesn't make great leaders. All of my leadership capability, I can tie directly back to those days in boots. And I can't say that strongly enough. I didn't realize that I was servant leader until I had to do like a retrospective on what do I do and why do I do it? Where did that come from? And how do I and others benefit from it? But all of those principles that came from that little green monster that they gave us in boot camp translate today and will translate for as long as I'm in a leadership role. For our background in anti-terrorism, site protection, those type of quick reactionary teams, those things with cyber, they translate directly
Absolutely.
As well. Being calm under intense pressure, asking questions, thinking ahead of what you're currently mired in. Right. You know, what is the next step to something, and are you prepared for that next step while you're in the middle of a cyber gunfight? So those things all translate directly. So, you know, if I were to talk to a young service member that's trying to get into tech, right, whether they're coming from, let's say, a technical background in the military or coming from just ground pounders in the military, I tell them, think about things differently. You don't need to ask, how do my current skills on the keyboard translate? Because you have more skills than that, right? You just at the very basic level, you have a lot of energy, like a lot of physical energy. You can stay awake for 24 hours, for 30 hours if you need to, chasing down a cyber threat, because sometimes those things don't sleep. So don't think that you're unprepared to come into this world of cyber, because you are. You just don't know how to draw those correlations yet because you don't have the experience and the wisdom yet. But don't sell yourself short.
And so you spoke already a little bit about my next question, but now, so we talk about the younger folks, right? What about those older veterans that may be wanting to look to make that lateral move into cybersecurity? What advice do you have for them?
Sure. Similar thing, don't sell yourself short. You have a lot of skills that transfer. I mean, even if you have been doing construction since you got out, right? There is still a process to most things. There are methodologies, and the military will give you that attention to detail and the requirement to follow a scripture, so to speak. Make sure that you, when you sit in front of an interview panel or a singular interview, make sure that you talk about how something that you learned in the military translates to what you're being asked to do. If it's cybersecurity that you're after, let's say you want to be a penetration tester, okay? Talk about how you were given all the tools you need to identify weaknesses in armor, or how to look through a layered defense model and see where things are weak and find the corners in those defenses, and how you can translate that to the tech that you're trying to test. So there's lots of different ways to take the same concepts and apply them in a digital construct.
Love it. Absolutely perfect. Okay, so as we all know, as we wind down the main part of the interview, we get a little bit more fun. So it is time for 10 questions. Now, we've had enough out as far as our episodes go. I think we may have our first prepared guest, I'm just saying. So he told me ahead of time that maybe he had spent a few minutes, had listened to a couple episodes, and then maybe wrote some of these down. So it was going to happen at some point. So it doesn't surprise me that it's my jarhead brethren that's the one that's going to get that done. So, all right. So 10 questions with Alan Roundtree. Here we go. What is your favorite word?
Veracity.
Love it. Any color commentary on that?
It's the pursuit of fact or truth. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I live my life. See, rule number one is basically veracity.
What is your least favorite word?
Can't. I have a 6-year-old daughter, and every time she tells me she can't do that, both as a father and just a human, what that says to me is I don't want to try, and I just dislike
your whole, hurt your soul.
Correctly.
What area of your work do you find most interesting?
Building up and growing the next generation of staff, not just for me, but just like expanding my network, getting them the opportunity to play above their current role.
Right.
I really enjoy that.
What area of your work is most challenging for you?
This one might be specific to my current employer, but I'm sure it exists elsewhere. But kind of breaking through the layered bureaucracy at large organizations.
Of course, yeah. What sound or noise do you love?
So I love being in the forest when dawn comes up, as like the thermals start to move and the wind pushes the leaves around and the birds wake up and start calling to each other. I love that moment of the day.
So was that the ones where you were voluntold to be there, or was it the ones you voluntarily were there?
Both.
What sound or noise do you hate?
The sound of licking.
Mm.
I just, yeah, I don't know.
Understood.
Not something.
The dog gets on that one. Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. What is your favorite curse word?
So I don't have a favorite curse word. Of course, I'm a Marine, so I curse much more than I should. My six-year-old daughter, who is the cuss police, will attest to that. For me, I think cursing is you're in a moment of negativity, and you kind of lose the ability to think, speak, and act through that. And so for me, I go to, you know, the most pointed expression of that negativity and use those words. So I don't really have a favorite one. Which one do I use most? Well, you know, the one.
The one. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I would like to go to McMurdo Station in Antarctica and study like ice core samples, maybe leverage AI to see if the data from those samples can teach us something new. But yeah, be a researcher in Antarctica. Or maybe drive Formula One. That would be fun, too.
Okay. Yeah, no, I can see that. What profession would you not like to do?
I know this because I served with a gentleman who does this. I would not like to investigate crimes against children. Because I don't believe I could act lawfully every time I solve one.
Understood. And finally, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear your God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I'd like to have my God tell me that I lived a life that is deserving of the right to prepare a space for my loved ones in eternity beside me.
Excellent. Everybody, Alan Roundtree. Excellent job. Appreciate it. Appreciate the time today. So today we covered quite a bit. So we covered a lot around cloud, a lot around risk, a lot around leadership for sure, which I think great insights there. And then specific to, you know, something that's passionate for me as well, which is the veteran community, try to get those folks, there's translatable skills there. And I think you have willing participants at our level that says we can help, right?
Right.
We can help you get your story down or get those translations down. So in the end, great session today, and I want to let everybody know, colleagues and friends, I'm renewing the call. We must professionalize the role of the CISO. And so until next time, I wish you health, happiness, and success in your journey in becoming the professional CISO. Let's do this.
We're professionalizing the CISO role, so please subscribe to the Professional CISO Podcast.